So we're back for another volume of Good Vibrations, and I'm on the line today to Australia, long distance style, to Mr. Max Egan, who is a guy that I've been following for quite some time. He does podcasts of his own. He runs a website called thecrowhouse.com, which is a fascinating portal for information. There's so much there. There's a whole archive of radio interviews and podcasts that he's done previously. I've listened to a whole world of these, and he's got a lot of good points to make about many things, which is why I'm very excited to be having a chat with him today. How you doing, Max?
I'm doing very well, Mark. Thank you for having me on.
Good to talk to you. And we find you in Byron Bay today, is it?
No, actually, I've left Byron. I'm up just over the border in Queensland at the moment.
Oh,
still out in the country. Very, very nice place. I'm living in a shed on a friend's property. Beautiful shed. Lovely shed. I like living that sort of a lifestyle, kind of cut off and out of society. So that's where I am at the moment. I was in Byron for about 3 years. I'm still only about 45 minutes away, though, so... Yeah, okay. It's a nice place, nice area.
Yeah, sounds ideal. There's days when I feel like just getting away from everything and going to a place like you've just described when all the madness starts to pile up. But happily, today's not one of them. Could you just give people a brief bit of background in terms of how and when you first came to realise the true nature of reality and of the self, and your process of unplugging from the matrix, so to speak, and learning to live self-sufficiently outside of the system? I know it's a story you've told often, so a potted version is fine.
Okay, well, I was awake at a very early age. When I was about four, I used to walk around thinking things were all messed up. And I got to a stage, basically through high school, where I just thought, I can't function in this society, so I became a musician and always worked playing music or doing front house mixing or whatever, something in the music industry. Just living on the outside of society for most of my life. So I was quite awake for a long time, but I created a bubble around myself, really, and I continued to research on the sign. I was always interested in ancient history ever since I was a kid, so I started looking at ancient history, and when you start looking at ancient history, it leads you one thing to another, you know, the pyramids and all this stuff. You try to figure out how these things were built, so you do the whole UFO rabbit hole, and you do all sorts of rabbit holes, and you finally get to government conspiracy and cover-ups, and you realise that nothing's the way they told us. So I'd always known about this, and it was always a fascinating subject for me, but I was still living life within my little musical bubble, really, up until probably 9/11 happened. I was actually still playing in a band when 9/11 happened. But when that did happen, it was so obvious that it was staged, and it was so obvious that this was the big event we were all waiting for. And it just sort of got serious for me, and I started really speaking out from about then. Music started taking a second place in my life, because I'd always had two main hobbies. One was music, and one was research into ancient history and cover-ups and conspiracies and the whole government situation. So one had been my sort of whole forte, what I did, and the other was my hobby. But it just, they kind of changed places when 9/11 happened. And so I'm lucky enough that I'm still doing something that I love, because it's something that I've done since I was a kid, you know, but it just became necessary to speak out when 9/11 happened. So that's what I started doing. And then I discovered YouTube in probably 2007, 2008. So I started making slideshows, and then I got offered the radio job in the United States and all sorts of stuff. I just thought, the more voices, the better. And so I just started doing it because I felt that it needed to be done. And it's been great. It's been really good to feel like I'm making some sort of a positive effect. And I actually feel like my life has far more purpose now than it ever did. Because music was great and it was fun, but it was a bubble that kept me sane, kept me so I didn't have to participate in the world. But I realized that, by not participating, I'd really let the situation grow to the point where now I'm forced to participate, really. Because once you know what's going on, well, you have to participate, you have to try to make a difference, it becomes sort of an obligation once you know. Yeah. You see that there is a certain urgency in getting this information out to people, so that's what I've tried to do with the Crow House. Yeah. And I've tried to keep commerce right out of it as well. I've put everything up there for free. I've made 6 films, I wrote a book, a lot of stuff, all the links, everything up there. There's nothing there for sale, it's all for free. So I do it that way because I want people to know that it's not something that I'm doing for income or anything like that.
Yeah, sure.
I do it because it needs to be done. I think it's important that people pay attention.
One thing that I know people always ask of researchers such as yourself and to a certain extent, such as myself, is how do you fund your activities? It's something that tends to make people suspicious, because, as you've just said, you like to put information out there for free, you're not out for making a profit. Of course, we all have operating costs that we have to cover, but a lot of sceptics get very suspicious of how it is that you can continue to operate in that way. And one thing I've found is I don't spend too much time worrying about where the finances come from to cover things that I need to do. And when you kind of unplug from that and don't spend too much time worrying about it, things just tend to fall into place synchronistically. You know, if you studied the minutiae of what's actually going on, you might come to realize why that is. But if you just take a step back and let things take their natural course, you find that you are enabled and empowered to do the things you need to do, and things just seem to fall into place. I don't know if that's been the experience for you.
It has, absolutely. You know, I've lost all attachment for money. I really have. I don't think about it. But if I need it, it'll be there. It'll just appear. I don't even think that it will. It just will.
Exactly.
I give as much as I can. I just did a talk over in Perth in Western Australia. I was flying over there to do a talk. And I took with me five of the films that I've made to give away to, so that everybody who was there could have five DVDs to take home. You know what I mean? So I give it all away. Some, I get donations from the website, not a lot, but I do get some, and the money that I get from that, I put into, just giving stuff away to people, printing DVDs and giving it all away as much as I can. Yeah. And it does, it just works out. Even I've been living in Byron Bay for 3.5 years. And I needed somewhere else to live. The property got sold. Now, I didn't know where I was going to go. I just posted, said, well, look, I need somewhere to live. I've got 3 weeks to move if anybody knows anywhere. And I got offered this beautiful shed in a beautiful spot, and I'm sort of living in paradise. I kind of seem to fall up. Every time I fall up. I don't fall down.
Yeah.
So it just works. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it happens. But
it just comes from somewhere.
It does. I mean, I think that if you're in your heart in what you do, and what you're doing has integrity, and you're not doing it for personal gain, you're doing it simply because it needs to be done, and you're giving in what you do, you're giving of yourself, you're giving to creation, creation will put you where you're supposed to be.
Yeah,
it works for me,
yeah.
And that's why I've been living my life since about 2006 or 2007.
That's definitely an attractive prospect, but the reality of the situation for many people, I'm sure, is that they've got families and, you know, they need to keep those bills paid. But what advice would you give to someone who's starting to realise the truth about themselves, being a spirit, soul, sovereign individual, as opposed to just another cog in the wheel, in the system, and who wants to live a more simplistic, holistic kind of lifestyle, but they might be laden down with a lot of the baggage that we find we accumulate in life? Is there a way of reconciling the two?
Well, there is, because, I mean, unfortunately, we're caught in a situation where that's what reality is. We've got people who are in control of our societies, our respective countries, who have installed a psychopathic system whereby if you do not pay to be alive, you will get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. And a lot of the things I've been finding through the talks that I've been giving and the emails I get and the lectures and all sorts of stuff is that people are looking for the silver bullet. Everywhere I go, people want to know, what is the form I can fill out to claim my sovereignty? How can I access my trust fund? How can I do this? How can I do that? How can I work within the parameters of this system and be free? And I keep telling them that there is no silver bullet. You know, the whole free man movement and all of the work that people have done to find their way through it, you know, it's been a learning curve for everybody. No one still has the silver bullet. No one has a way that you can fill out a piece of paper and suddenly become free. What people have done really with the free man movement and all the work they've done in exposing all this is just that. They've exposed it as being fiction. We made the whole thing up. It's just fiction. You know, and you're not going to find anything within the parameters of the legal system that is going to allow you to be free. The only way we are ever going to re-establish ourselves as humanity, as mankind, is by changing the paradigm altogether. We have to stand up against the system, realize what the government is, what politicians are, and realize what we are. We have to realize what we are before we can do anything. So we've got a system that's designed to divide us. It's designed to always... it locks us into what I call the pathogens, three pathogens. There's the the economic pathogen, whereby we have to collect paper, we have to pay to be alive, we have to exploit each other to do it. And the money's a weird thing. I mean, the more money you get, the more money you want. It's a weird thing. It affects your mind in that way. If you start collecting it, try this at home, folks. Try saving a few $100 and you'll get it up to $1,000 and go, oh, wow, now I've got $1,000. I wonder if I can get it to $5,000. You know, you get that. Oh, gee, I wonder if I can get it to $10. Yeah. And you just keep going. You just keep collecting this stuff. It affects your mind. It's really weird. And while that's going on, we've got this social pathogen whereby we measure ourselves up to yardsticks, which are completely unobtainable. They're fantasy. You look at a woman looks at a notice board advertising Dove soap or some makeup, and they want to emulate the woman on the billboard, but the woman on the billboard doesn't even look like that. She's photoshopped. It's completely unobtainable what they present you as having. You know, we've all got to have 2.4 kids and a white picket fence and live like the Brady Bunch or something. I mean, you know, it's fantasy, but it affects our minds like a pathogen whereby we're always trying, you know, we're measuring our self-worth by our rungs on the social ladder and by the stuff that we believe we own, all the stuff that we collect to ourselves. And then we've got the religious pathogen, which also affects people with the redeemer complex, the external savior. Someone's coming to save you. It's okay for you to get expelled by society, which is what the social pathogen does. We've become scared of the poor, you know, so it's okay for all this to happen. Because once your back's totally at the wall and everything is lost, then you know, a superhuman being's going to come down from heaven and save you. You know, so it makes it all okay. So we've got a society that's infected by all this stuff. So there's no way we can find any parameters, any tool working within this psychopathic system that's going to free us. We have to realize what we are and start respecting ourselves and respecting each other so we can stand up as a united community and realize that the government is simply public trustees. These are just people, same as us, that we elect to look after our infrastructure for us and ensure that we have a viable future. And they're doing a god-awful job. But they get away with it because we keep trying to work within their parameters, all the laws and the fiction that they create. We have to step back from it and realize it's all fiction. But we're not going to do that until we have a united community. That's why my message has always been to put away the past, put away everything everybody's done, put away everything. Start respecting each other. You can't judge the people around you if they've done the wrong thing. I mean, because they're being forced to operate within the parameters of a psychopathic system. Like you say, you have to go to work, you have to do all this stuff, you have to go and exploit your fellow man simply to feed the children and your wife and the people that you love.
Yeah.
So it's a completely opposite dichotomy you've got going on. You've got this conflict straight away where you've got to go out and exploit people to make the paper you believe you need to survive because that's the system we've got, you know?
Yeah.
So you can't judge people because, you know, you're locked within the parameters of a psychopathic system and you're told to make it work. And you know, what do? You've got to do something. So,
yeah.
You know, we're not going to find a silver bullet. We've got to learn to respect each other. And I always go back to who and what we are. I've done so many shows where I've talked about the nature of reality and where your consciousness comes from. And when you really start understanding these things, then reality changes. You start viewing things in a different way and you stop having stuff with people, you know? So that's been my message. I mean, it's a very simple message. And I'm probably quite repetitive on the podcasts or the radio shows that I do, but really, I believe this is the answer. The answer is for us to know ourselves and to really respect ourselves and really forgive ourselves, because when you truly forgive and respect yourself, then you can forgive and respect other people by default. It just happens by default. You don't have to think about it. And if we all did that, the world would change in 3 seconds.
Yeah, really. I'm mindful of the fact that there's going to be a lot of people listening to this podcast who are hearing this information for the first time. I mean, I know that you've put it out many times on your various podcasts and your various other radio appearances. But just for people that are new to the subject, thinking specifically of the legal system that's been set up by the control system, and particularly here in the United Kingdom. I mean, I know that you understand how the UK law infrastructure works, as well as the US and Australia, because I know you've studied all of them. But could you explain to people the important differences between common law, known as law of the land, and maritime law, and the instances in which these are used? Because although those that have studied the subject will be very familiar with the differences, most everyday folk that have never had this stuff explained to them would have no idea that these two even exist in tandem with each other. Could you just give us just a potted overview of what's going on with these?
Okay, well, maritime law is really the law of commerce, the law of the sea. And what they've done is they've basically inflicted all of that upon people who are on the land. They've done this through a corporate system. They basically imposed a corporate system over us. The common law is just common law. You know, we do no harm. I mean, really, if it gets down to that, I always say even above common law, because common law is even a man-made construct as well, based on what we perceive justice to be. But really, if you look at it as God's law, which is true common law, natural law, God's law you can sum up in three words, eight letters, do no harm. That's it. Do no harm. And whereby we are subject to legislation, and it's called law, it's that which is legal rather than that which is lawful, L-E-G, legislation, you know. So it's that which is legal. A great statement somebody said, it might have been Ayn Rand, someone said that legislation is politicians attempting to remove natural law from the planet and replace it with the will of politicians. That's basically what legislation is. It's people just writing lines in books and saying this is what you have to do. It's just rules, corporate rules. So we have a corporate system, and it's a fiction. It's a fictional system. The whole maritime system is a fictional system. We're tricked into participating in it through our birth certificates and the use of legalese. And so there's a language which is called legalese, which sounds like English,
yeah,
but exactly. It has completely different meanings for the words. And when police officers and lawyers talk to you, they're talking in legalese and you don't know it.
Exactly. And it replicates nautical terms, doesn't it, in many cases? Like birth certificate, birth, the double meaning of that word, and dock in a court and such.
Yeah, you go to court, you're standing in the dock, of course. And it's all maritime admiralty terms, you know. Your vessel, your vehicle, you know, all these sorts of things, the birth canal, the birth certificate, these are all maritime admiralty terms,
yeah.
All of them. You know, the whole purpose, do you understand? People think understand means comprehend, but it actually means stand under. All these sorts of things. This is how legalese works. So they trick you with the language. It's kind of a word matrix that we live in. And it's very, very difficult for people to find their way through. And that's what everyone's looking for. See, the thing is, you know, the whole legal system is fiction. And not only is it fiction, it's actually a fiction within a fiction. Because the whole government system is fiction. You know, government isn't actually real. It isn't. You know, people think, oh, the government's going to get me. It's almost like Parliament House is going to get up and it's going to march down the street. It's like this big monster that's going to come and eat your house or something, you know. Like, government exists in a book. It's not real. It exists on paper. Men with expensive suits go to these weird buildings and they do what it says in these books. That's government, you know. And all government really exists to do is to put more words in these books and create more and more rules and make the system more and more efficient until humanity is completely and utterly locked down. That seems to be the only purpose of government, you know, but it's all fiction. And within that fictional government system, you've got this fictional legal system, which is only actually supposed to apply to those within the law society. So it only really apply to public servants, but they trick everybody into believing that it applies to them. Because it's all really, it comes back to trust. I mean, it's a very complicated issue. You can look at trust law and say that basically what's happened is that the government trustees have tricked all the people into believing that they're the trustees because the trustees are accountable for any damage that's done. But really, it's just all corporate rules that don't really apply to us. But you try to stand up against it, and you get eaten up alive because the rest of the community doesn't know this. They just think you're a troublemaker.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to try to inform the people that they're living in a fiction. They're living in a paper-based matrix. It's a very, very complicated issue. I mean, you could spend a long time just trying to explain people the ins and outs of the law and the legal system. But I think, you know, if we can step above that and ultimately realize that it's all fiction, it's all man-made, the whole lot, we made it all up.
Yeah.
Ultimately, even under their law, you know, God created man, gave man dominion over the earth, man created society, society created government created statute, law. They're way down the food chain. We are man, but we have to realize who we are and what we're swimming in and what we've got going on here. We've got these public trustees who have turned themselves into rulers and just keep writing rules to control our lives because we don't know who we are, you know?
You've got the duplicity that's applied by the manipulation of language, as we've said, when it comes to maritime law. There's the double meaning of all these terms. But aside from that, there's also a sense in which language has a kind of magical element. If you take the view that language is energy. Well, everything is energy, but, you know, words are energy vibrating at various frequencies. And that if you know what you're doing, you can manipulate language to have a kind of magical spell over the people that are using it and the people that are being exposed to it. Could you just tell us a bit about your understanding of how this works? You know, language as magic, as a kind of spell.
Well, I mean, language is a spell, especially the written word. I mean, the first thing they teach you to do when you go to school is they teach you to spell. What are you doing when you're spelling? You're casting spells.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, often people would say to me, and I often use this, people say to me that a spell is a series of words. I would say that a word is a series of spells. The letters themselves, the spelling, and especially with English, like, we are given certain parameters and told this is how reality works, this is what we are capable of, this is what is and is not possible. And our whole understanding of reality is based on this. And we're taught it all through words, and we're taught a totally left-brain education. Your right brain is very artistic, much more all-encompassing. Right brain will look more at things energetically and analyze things in a completely different way to your left brain. The right brain will really look at the whole spectrum of reality as a collage and take pieces out of it and view it energetically. Left brain is language. So all of our education is directed at the left brain. It's all directed at language. So people think in words. So their understanding of reality is based on their understanding of the language. And the language is a spell. They're spelling reality by what they believe is possible. There's a thing that I always talk to people, the measurement problem. I mention this quite often. I talk to people about it. The measurement problem is the fact that when a scientist actually goes to measure an atom, he can't measure the atom because the electrons that revolve around the nucleus are infinite. They exist everywhere at once. And it isn't until he goes to measure the atom that the electrons coalesce to form the atom. So the act of observation creates the atom. So that's how creative we are. Yeah. We can create things by observing them. And yet we're told that society has to fit within certain parameters. And we're given this in books, and books are quite hypnotic. We see something written down, and we tend to believe it. It gives it credence because it's written. It's the written word. And what it is, it's someone else's opinion of reality, someone else's version of reality. We go to school, we're taught that this is how reality works. This is what is and is not possible. And so I don't think outside the box, because what you're saying isn't possible. But I would suggest that if we can create an atom by observing it, then anything is possible. And the only thing that is not possible is that which you believe is not possible. Mm. See, so that's how we're locked into these spells. You know, and they take a lot of words out of our language as well, which would explain spiritual understandings to us. I often use the word dharma, which you could write a whole book to explain to people.
Right.
It's a huge spiritual understanding, but if you're speaking the language of Hindi, you've just got to say that one word, dharma, and people know exactly what you're talking about. So in English especially, it's a very, very mechanical, very limited understanding of reality you get from English. You know what I'm saying? It's a very, very mechanical language.
Hmm. Just going back to your comment about when you observe an atom, you cause that process to happen just by observing it. I'm often reminded of this phrase we hear, if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody to hear it, does it make a sound? I wonder if that phrase ties into the kind of thing you're putting across here. If there's nobody to observe that happening and absorb the sound, is there a sound? Do you see what I mean? I don't know if that phrase kind of ties into this idea.
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, you would question, if there's nobody there to see the tree, is the tree actually there even? If nobody's looking at it, it's a very, very deep rabbit hole to go down. You can get quite philosophical about it and speculate on all sorts of things, you know, like Schrödinger's cat. The whole concept of Schrödinger's cat, it's a similar thing. So it's an interesting concept, absolutely. But I believe that anything is possible. I really do. I mean, just look at the nature of atoms. Everything is made of atoms. Atoms are 99.99999% empty space. That's like 1/10,000th of 1% of an atom is actually matter. And yet this chair I'm sitting on is made of atoms, and yet only 1/10,000th of 1% of it is actually here. Yeah. That's all that's matter. So how am I sitting on something that essentially doesn't exist? Because there is no matter. Matter is simply divisions in space based on perception.
Yeah.
Even the Planck, the father of quantum physics, Max Planck, said that there is no matter as such. It's merely a slow vibration, a condensed vibration of energy. So reality isn't what we think it is, but we're locked into what we perceive reality to be. Not only are we're capable of creating any type of reality we want. So not only are we given that completely boxed view of what reality is, but we're forced to live within a fictional world within that reality, which is the world of our society. And within that society, we're forced to live within another fiction, which is the legal system. And yeah, these are fictions within fictions. It's like a fractal. But it's reversed from what the real fractal of nature should be. See, that's what this system does, is it creates a mirror image of reality, basically, and it causes it to be the exact opposite of what it is. It's like law that we were talking about before. You look at natural law, which is do no harm. Really, that's natural law. Natural law and common law frees you. It frees humanity to be all that they can be. So what this system has done is it created a system that it calls law, but it's actually a legal system, and it removes all of your freedoms from you and works to support the system. So it's the exact opposite. Because in a breach of a law, there has to be an injured party for a law to have been broken. And yet the only injured party in the breach of a statute is the person who's prosecuted. So who broke the law?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's a reverse from what it should be. Another good one to think about with this is the religious concept, the religious system. If you look at the Gnostic vision of morality, for example, which predates Christianity and predates most religious systems, the concept of morality would be to do not do unto others that which you would not have done unto you, that which you would find abhorrent. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Do not do to you that which I would find bad if it was done to me.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good way to live your life.
That's what my dad raised me that way. There was only one thing he ever used to say to me when I was growing up, which is don't treat other people in a way that you would not like to be treated yourself. And it's incredible how powerful and potent that one statement is. I've tried to live my life according to that, and I've thought to myself many times, if only everyone would just follow this one simple rule, how much a better deal for everyone would it be?
Exactly. Well, that was the Gnostic version of that. But what we see with Christianity is do unto others that which you would have others do unto you. Okay, so now I'm suddenly doing something for you because I want you to do something good for me. So it's turned into self-service. It's turned into profit.
Right.
What if you would like the woman next door to come and buy you a holiday to Hawaii? Should you go and buy her a holiday to Hawaii? That's doing unto others. I mean, you can go on forever and ever and about how ridiculous this statement is.
Hmm.
What if you're a psychotic gay man and you'd love the guy next door to jump through the window and jump on you? Should you go and jump through the guy next door's window? You could keep going with this. You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's completely ridiculous to think of do unto others that which you would have others do unto you. And yeah, that was the Christian message, and that is a reversal of the syntax of do not do unto others that which you would not have done unto you. It's a completely different meaning, a completely different syntax. It sounds good on the surface, but really when you look at the meaning, it's the exact opposite of what it should be. And that's what this system's done in every aspect that it's done. And what's happened with society is that our imagination has been hijacked and it's been replaced with fantasy. We've been given fiction and we believe it's real. But imagination is not fiction. Imagination is real. I mean, every house, the house that you're in, for you that house to be there, it comes from someone's imagination. They had to imagine it first and draw it and then build it. But ultimately it came, it's a product of imagination. But what we're being presented with is fantasy. It's not real. It's complete and utter fiction. And we're swimming in this false reality that just looks and tastes and smells like reality, but ultimately it isn't. It's a fiction. And it's a big step. It's a big paradigm shift for people to think about things this way.
Yeah, really.
But, you know, if you can talk about it enough and get the word out to people, one day the penny just drops and they go, oh, my God, now I see. Now I see the world for what it is.
Yeah.
And they realize that we're actually swimming in fiction.
Yeah. And talking about creating your own reality, another couple of phrases that spring to mind that we use all the time and just don't think about where they came from. One is, speak of the devil, and the devil will appear. But the more potent one is, be careful what you wish for. Very simple phrase that people use in everyday life. These phrases didn't come around by accident, I would suggest. There's some very real relevance to these phrases. Be careful what you wish for. In other words, if you want something bad enough and you focus your thoughts and intent on it, you can actually manifest it. That's what we hear.
Well, absolutely, you can, and it depends on the state you're in, the energetic state you're in. I mean, manifestation is very, very powerful. It's very, very easy, and it's quite a powerful thing. But we're led away from that as well with a lot of stuff. And this is what we were talking about before when I said that although the elite are very, very powerful, and they do control our lives in many, many aspects, I think that we give them too much credit for what they do and what they're capable of. Because if we really, really believe, and there's enough people that believe that they are capable of this, we can give them the power to do it, because we can create reality ourselves through our imagination.
Yeah.
You know, so we've got to be really, really careful how much credit we give these people. I mean, sure, they control every aspect of our lives as far as commerce and economics and socially and all this sort of stuff. But as far as it goes with the whole transhumanist agenda and the genetic modification of the planet and all the things that they're attempting to do, it's very, very haphazard in that respect. They don't know what they're going to come up with. They're just experimenting and doing everything they can to create some sort of new human that is different to the old human. But it's very, very haphazard what they're doing. And I think we give them far too much credit, even as much as they control. I mean, because they don't really control my life. They don't control your life. They only control us in as much as we're forced to live in a world where we have to pay to be alive.
Yep.
But they control what you do every day. And the more they try to control human consciousness, the more we keep shifting the goalposts. We just keep imagining new realities and imagining new things, and we just keep implementing them. That's the way it works. That's what we do. The human race and human consciousness is very, very difficult to lock down. And the more negative they try to make it, then the more we're going to wake up. But we must be careful not to give these people too much credit for what they're capable of and the power that they hold. Because a lot of the power that they hold is fiction.
Yeah.
All you need is well-placed people in the music industry and in the film industry. And really, when you look at it, you've got, you know, half a dozen people run all of these companies.
Yeah.
All you've got to do is put the right symbolism in all the video clips and in the movies and all this sort of stuff. And people get the perception that you are all powerful, and there is this,
yeah,
this terrible
that it's everywhere
hand, and it's way too big for us to ever deal with.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And people are asking me all the time. They listen to the stuff that I put out in podcasts, and they say, you know, it's all very well dwelling on how they've got us all locked down, but what can we actually do about it? And what you hear and what you come to understand is that if enough like-minded people were to pool their positive consciousness all at the same time, the power of positive thought and positive vibrations is so much more powerful than the negative stuff. This control system and this version of reality, this paradigm that we're living in, could be overwritten overnight if the volume of people were there all at once. Overnight change.
Well, it could. It could. Like I said, we could change the world in 3 seconds if people just woke up to what reality was and how it works.
It's only that we haven't reached that tipping point yet. And the minute we do, then everything changes.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But we also have to apply ourselves. You know, we've got to apply ourselves to the world in which we live and lead by example in all that we do.
Yeah.
You know, the most important thing we can, the two things we need to pay attention to more than anything are our intention and our imagination. These are very, very important things. We've got to be careful what we're imagining, careful what you wish for, and you've got to be in the right intention in all that you do. I mean, if you're out there, even if you're out there running a business and you're out there exploiting other people to make money to feed your family, as long as you're not exploiting them too much, you're just doing what you have to do to survive, but you're doing it out of love for your family, not out of love for the money, not out of love for exploiting people. You know, lead by example, and if you can give to someone, then give to them. Because it feels good to give. And if you give from the heart and don't expect anything back, then the universe will look after you. It does for me. And it's a lot of the time when I tell people this, they'll go out and say, okay, I'm going to start giving to people, then the universe is going to give me all this stuff. No, it's not. You're expecting it. It's not going to do anything if you expect it to. You know, you've got to give without any need to give to get anything back. Just go and give. Do a random act of kindness every day. Be careful of what your intentions are and really be aware of what your intentions are. Yeah, it's so important, you know. Even in the Gnostic vision, the two things they say are the most important things for humankind is intention and imagination. We really have to be careful of what where our heart lies, basically.
Yeah.
You know, be focused in what we do. Respect ourselves and respect each other.
That's some great advice right there. The control system seems to feel the need to announce its intentions in advance. So we talked about legalese, where by duplicity they've kind of changed the language so that they're kind of letting you know what's going on, and they're kind of giving you an insight into what's happening, but they've dressed it up in a way that they know most people won't understand it. And then you get predictive programming in Hollywood movies. Everything from 9/11 to Sandy Hook to the Batman shootings has been encoded in various movies one way or another in advance. And we get it in music videos as well, cartoons. Just before a major terror event happens, you come to realise it's been encoded into various sort of entertainment outlets. And then you could say that in the legal, banking, corporate sector, we're always given fair warning, so to speak, of their intended activities. But they're always kind of duplicitous in the manner that they present it. It's as if they feel they have to adhere to some sort of karmic law of will and intent, and that they have to kind of give you some sort of advance notice of what they want to do. Again, we're getting into the realms of magic here, I feel. But I just wonder if you've got any view as to why they do this. Why do they feel the need to let you know what they plan to do?
Look, again, I think a lot of it is to convey the sense of power, the sense of hopelessness to the people.
Right.
I really do. I think a lot of it is. I mean, perhaps there is. I mean, I've often thought that there is. You've got to have people that are willing participants in all of these rituals, after all. Hmm. But how is watching a Batman movie participating in a ritual just simply because there are things in there that Sandy Hook written in there and rah rah rah? How is that really participating in a ritual? But then once Sandy Hook happens and the event's there, you know that the conspiracy theorists are going to go back and they're going to see this because they scrutinise this stuff. And where did the information even come from? Who was the first person to find Sandy Hook written in the Batman movie? Because it's kind of hard to see unless you're really, really looking for it.
Yeah.
So was it released or leaked by them, you know?
Always gets spotted by somebody, doesn't it? There's just so many people on the ball now on the case.
But was it them who leaked the information even?
Yeah, you have to
wonder. Did they put it there just so they could announce it after the shooting so they could convey the image that they're all powerful?
Who put Gene Rosen rehearsing his lines on YouTube? How did it
exactly get? Exactly. That's what I was asking. I'm not interested in the fact that he's there rehearsing his lines. What I want to know is who recorded that video and how did it get it on YouTube?
Exactly.
And why?
Exactly.
What was the purpose of that if not to inflame the conspiracy movement? You know, to create... I put out a whole story about Sandy Hook where I said this is going to be used to vilify the truth movement. We're going to see this with future events. And with the Boston bombing again, here you've got down home guys, baseball caps. Apparently they were truthers, you know. So it's all designed to vilify the truth movement, to start weeding out those who are speaking out against the government and to portray them as domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
That's the next logical step. It's very predictable that they would do this. And that's where they've been leading. Through the Batman shooting, you know, right up from Waco. It's taken a little while, but right up through Waco, Ruby Ridge, Oklahoma. I mean, it's all been leading this way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, a common view is that they put all this predictive programming stuff in place to kind of energetically empower what they want to do. But I wonder if we might be missing the ball here. And again, it's all illusion. And they put this stuff in there to present the idea that they're all powerful, as you say, and that when conspiracy theorists then jump all over these things when they have happened and say, oh, this was because of this and this bit doesn't add up and there's this anomaly, you're actually empowering it then after the event and helping to convey the idea that this system is far more powerful than it actually is. They would have done that by design, knowing that this would be the case, because there's so many researchers out there now, particularly with the advent of the internet, and everyone likes to jump on YouTube and do their little video, what they think, and you get that multiplied hundreds of thousands of times around the world, and it can then present the impression that the system is way, way more powerful than it actually is.
Absolutely. I think that's why they do it, because if we perceive it to be more powerful than actually is, we give it that power. We have the imagination and the intention to do that. And all they have to do is capture our attention, control our intention, and control our imagination.
But then,
and we can quite, if they can give us something that is fantasy, we can imagine it into reality, because that's what we do.
Yeah.
So we've got to be careful how much credit we're giving these people. It only takes a handful of people in the right position to do this. And honestly, I mean, you've got these cabals that control the money system that are totally enslaving the world, impoverishing the world, because people have been trained to think that money's real. But they want to create this control grid, and we're literally giving them the power to do it by our belief that they are all-powerful, and not questioning their authority, not questioning these public trustees, not participating in reality. Too many people lock themselves in love and light, but they don't apply that to the world in which they live. A lot of love and light people that I've met are actually quite dark on the inside. They've all got stuff with people around them.
Yeah.
They're all threatened by other people and threatened by this, and they have little bitch sessions at each other. And I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah.
If you really understand who and what you are and how reality works, all that stuff that you've got with other people, it all breaks down. It all falls away because it's all fiction. It's all a product of this society. We've got to put it all away and be careful what we're imagining. But don't give these people too much credit, because we are so more powerful. The human race is incredibly powerful. Look what we created. We created this whole mess. Half the time we've created through our non-participation, because we're distracted by music, by the economic system, by the social pathogen, by the religious pathogens, by everything that they give us to distract us. We just have to step back and realize just how powerful we are. Every single problem that we've got on this planet, we created, whether it was someone controlling our intention, controlling our minds and forcing us to act in certain ways or not, we still created it. Everything that we've got here is a creation of man. All the stuff, all of our social systems, every single problem that exists on this planet is a creation of man. So we need to be aware of what we actually can create and what we could create if we were to suddenly start to respect each other.
Yeah.
And realize that this is a fictional system. These are just public trustees we elected to office, and they're doing exactly the opposite of what we elect them to do. But we've been trained to be in fear of these people and to cower behind, away from these people. And it's been a divide and conquer mentality that's done it. That's what the social system is all about. It's designed to divide us by our social standing and what we perceive ourselves to be based on what we own. So you've really got to step back and look at this and see what the solution is, because we're never going to find it by operating within their parameters. We're never going to find it with the free man movement or any of the sovereignty movement, any of this stuff. It's great to expose the system as fiction, but we're only going to find it if we step into our hearts and step into the power that we have and start respecting each other. That's the ultimate key.
We then come across this kind of dichotomy type situation where it's definitely good advice, once you've figured out what's going on and how the game is played, to just kind of unplug from it and not associate with it and just live life according to your own terms, on their terms. But then, those of us that have figured out what's going on also feel a responsibility to let other people that are still trapped in the matrix, so to speak, know what's happening. And there's lots of people out there that have never heard of the free man movement, they've never heard of legalese, they've never heard of any of these duplicitous things that they hoist on us. And so we feel that we need to put this information out there. And then it could be argued that by putting this information out there, by putting your YouTube videos out and your blogs and all the rest of it, you're then in turn helping to empower the system by talking about it again, by drawing attention to what it is they're doing. So it's a difficult one. Any thoughts on that?
Well, in some ways, many people are. I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that have got a vested interest in the fight and maintaining the fight, and there's a lot of people who talk about the problems all the time, but they don't address any solutions.
Yeah.
I really believe if you're going to look at any of this, you really need to look at it holistically, and you need to be providing solutions, or at least a dialogue that might lead to a solution, offering a suggestion of what the solution could possibly be.
I think so.
You can't just be presenting problems to people, because you put them in fear and you empower the system. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people doing that. That's why every topic that I talk about, I try to talk about what the solution is to it. I really believe the solution is us, is for us to find our hearts, to find our heart space. And this might sound very new agey to people, but it's not. Because if you really understand who and what you are, as I so often say, then all the barriers between you and the people around you fall away. And that's what gives us the power to fix this. We've got to have this respect for each other and realize that we're all in this together. I believe that each generation on this planet are the custodians of life on this planet. We are the custodians of the future for our children. We're the custodians of freedom. We're the custodians of good government. We're the custodians of the earth. I don't personally believe you can own any part of the earth. You may perhaps be a custodian of part of the earth. And if you viewed yourself in a role of custodianship rather than ownership, you might actually respect the earth. So it's another way of looking at things. But, you know, we've got a responsibility here. And I think, you know, leading by example in all that you do and informing people that there is a better way of doing things is very, very important. You can't be just presenting problems to people, running around with a red flag screaming fear, fear, fear at your neighbors. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
You've got to sit down and rationally, calmly show them that there is a better way, lead by example, and plant seeds in their minds so they can discover the truth for themselves. It's very, very confronting when you're trying to tell someone what's going on in the world and they don't want to hear because you are basically destroying their entire belief system. You're telling them that everything they've done in their life up to that point is completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
And that reality is not what they think it is. And this is very, very confronting for people.
Yeah,
so it doesn't help trying to do that. They just think you're a nutter. What you've got to do is be a wonderful person, lead by example in all that you do, be a pleasure to be around, and help them understand why you are such a wonderful, helpful, pleasurable person. It's because you have this information. You understand how reality works, and you believe that by acting in this way, you can create a better world. And they will start to resonate with this because they have a better world when you're around. They resonate with what you do, and they see how happy you are, and things just work for you all the time. The synchronicities just fall into place, and they start wanting to emulate it. And then they just have an epiphany. That's what happened with my sister. My sister was completely in the matrix about 3 years ago, and then one morning she just woke up and went, "Oh, my God, my brother's been right the whole time." She just had this epiphany. She could just see it. You know, because of the seeds that have been planted.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's what I believe you have to do. But you've really got to be addressing the solutions. And I think that all of the problems are an opportunity for us. If we can understand that all problems are opportunities, all errors are opportunities. That's how mankind learns. It's through our errors. And this system is a system of errors. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's been done on purpose. A lot of people say that, oh, the system's broken. And I say, no, it's doing exactly what it's designed to do. But, you know, mankind really is in a state of error. Generally speaking, we are in a state of error, and we need to correct the error, but we have to be aware the error exists before we're able to correct it. So, you know, and the solution, I believe, is a simple solution. The solution is for us to remember who and what we are and remember that we created all this. It's all fiction. The whole legal system's fiction. And if we can respect each other and stand as a united community, we can change the world in one day.
Yeah,
we've just got to remember who we are. So, you know, it empowers it to a certain extent. But, you know, the world's in a bad way, and if you are awake, you can't ignore it. And if you are presenting solutions and helping empower the people that you're giving the information to, then I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, you put out some great information, and, you know, it's very empowering to people, and it seems that anyone that does that every now and again attracts the attention of the odd individual that seeks to discredit them and bring them down for whatever reason. And listening to a radio program of yours from earlier in the year, I know you were addressing the situation with this character known as Dallas Goldbug, who I think goes by the name of Ed Shiriani as well. He's posted a whole load of stuff online over the months, and he comes up with some fairly wild theories. I'm quite an open-minded guy, and I'm prepared to give any kind of alternative view some thought, but some of the stuff he comes out with, come on now. His claim is that David Icke is actually Richard Branson. They're one and the same, so that this guy has the time to run a multi-million pound corporation and still maintain a career as the world's most prominent conspiracy theorist. He also tells us that Luke Rutkowski of We Are Change New York is the son of Vladimir Putin, because he looks a bit like him. So there's some fairly crazy stuff there. And I know that he recently laid into yourself, and he kind of exposed you as a shill and insider, which is a claim that everyone gets. And I think when you get these kind of claims, it's sort of validation that you're on the right track, really, the fact that somebody takes the time and trouble to try and discredit you. But I know that you mentioned in your radio broadcast a few months ago that you're planning to visit Dallas, I think, in July. I think you said your son is going out for an event and you're hoping to confront this individual. I just wonder if you could bring us up to date on that whole front and how you think this situation might have arisen.
Look, that's what he is. I mean, he's COINTEL. I totally believe that that's a whole COINTEL setup. It's there specifically for things such as what we're seeing at Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing. So that actors can be used, you can have people playing roles, whether they're like not actors from Hollywood, but certain people that are playing certain roles at these events. But if you start calling actors and start pointing this out to people now, then there's sites like the Dallas Goldbug site, which is put there to tell you that everybody's actors. The whole world, it's all one family, one banking family, that all the conspiracy theorists and everyone speaking out against the government and all the people in the governments and all this stuff, they're actually all one family. They all change, put on makeups, put on suits. They must spend their time flying around the planet pretending that they're everybody else, I mean, according to this guy.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And as soon as he attacked me, my son told me he wanted to go to Dallas for a gaming convention, which is not something that I really want to do. It'd be like watching paint dry for me. But he has since changed his mind and doesn't want to go to Dallas anymore.
Right.
But I thought it was quite remarkable that suddenly I was given an opportunity to go there, and I thought, well, okay, he's attacked me right now, and my son tells me he wants to go to Dallas. I guess I'm supposed to go and meet this guy. So I put it out there and said, hey, I'll see you in July. You can come and expose me, you know.
Yeah.
Because apparently I'm some country and western singer who pretends to be someone from the Green Party here in Australia. So some country and western singer from America who apparently does the 14-hour flight out to Australia every other day to pretend that he's the Green Party minister, and then he puts on a face prosthesis and does my radio show.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm seen in public, I'm this guy wearing a prosthetic face.
Yeah.
I don't even know how he comes up with this stuff. It's quite amazing. But no, it doesn't look like I'm going to be going to Dallas in July, which is a good thing. It actually looks like I might be going to Gaza in July. I might be going back there.
Right. You went there last year, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, went in there last year in September, and went in there with Ken O'Keefe. We spent 10 days. Looks like I'll probably be going back there in July. I've applied to go in with a convoy, and I received my application to give to the Egyptian government the other day, and I filled that in and sent it back. So there's a good chance that I'll be in Gaza in July. I'm actually supposed to go and speak in Syria at the end of June. I was supposed to go last month, actually, but it was too rough over there for them to have the conference, so they postponed it. But there's a chance if it doesn't improve, well, maybe I won't be, but if there's an opportunity to go there for 2 or 3 days at the end of June, then I'll be doing that, and then probably going on from there into Gaza and stay in Gaza for a month. I really, really hope to do that in July.
So if people want to keep up with your activities and find out more about the information you put out and have access to all the links and all the rest of it, I think that's all available from your main website, which is thecrowhouse.com. Is that right?
That is correct. You'll get links to everything there. I've got a new YouTube channel, which is just called The Crow House. My old one was called AOD Scarecrow, but I wasn't able to upload full-length videos to that, so I've left that channel now. That had 38,000 subscribers on it. And I've left that there, and I've opened up another one. Actually, the new one that I've got's been open for 4 years. It's just been sitting there as a backup channel. I've never used it. But I've changed over to that channel now, so now I can upload full-length radio shows. And the link to that is there on the Crow House. Just click YouTube channel. That'll take you to the Crow House video channel. And that's where all my radio shows get posted every week. They also get posted in the archives. And there's a lot of information on the website. It's over 1,000 pages now. There's lots and lots of links, and it's all very, very useful information. There's nothing there to buy, and there's nothing there that's too way out, which will lead you down a rabbit hole you don't need to go down. It's basically all must know and must see information. Everything that's on the site is relevant, and yeah, use it as a portal, use it as a means to obtain this information and share it with people. It's all free, and that's where everything is that you'll find. Everything that I do, it's always posted on that website somewhere.
Yeah, great stuff, Max. I know a lot of people find what you do very inspirational and empowering. I certainly do, and I'm sure a lot of people will, listening to what you've had to say today. So thanks very much for taking the time out. I really appreciate your input. Great stuff that you're doing, mate. Really good stuff. And thank you for your contribution.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening. I hope people do find it empowering. I really hope it does help. I'm just a voice, and it's just my perspective. It's just one person's perspective. But, you know, I do what I can, and I hope it does help. I hope it does empower people. I think we have a real situation here that needs addressing, and I do it simply because it needs to be done. So, yeah, thanks for having me on. Thanks for your kind words, Mark.